seeing temperatures around 50 degrees and it's pretty nice here in the Seattle area.
Special report, California shooting. I'm Chaz Henry. First responders on the scene of a mass shooting in the Southern California city of San Bernardino, where multiple people, we don't yet know exactly how many, have been hurt in an attack by what correspondent Deborah Farrick tells us seems to have been multiple gunmen.
Witnesses told police that they saw three men, and apparently the suspects got into a black SUV and then exited the parking lot.
Sergeant Vicky Cervantes of the San Bernardino Police Department on officers' efforts to keep uninvolved people safely away from the scene.
We don't know where those shooters are. They are heavily armed, and they are possibly wearing body armor, things of that nature. It is not a safe area to be. Very dangerous, and the fewer innocent people we have in here, the better.
After a SWAT team cleared a building where some of the shooting had taken place, a sheriff's bomb squad found what they described as a suspicious package. They're handling it with an explosive ordnance disposal robot. One hospital nearby where all this happened saying they're treating 8 victims of the shooting. I'm Chaz Henry. In Baltimore, the trial of police officer William Porter underway. He's one of the 6 officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray, who prosecutors say died of injuries sustained while Porter and the others were taking him to jail. Correspondent Miguel Marquez.
As for how his neck got injured, they're saying the 4th and 5th cervicals, that it was crushed, like you were diving in a pool and your head hit the bottom and it caused your spine to be crushed, essentially, and that Gray could speak because everything from his neck down was basically inoperable.
Speaking today to the Economic Club of Washington, Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen said the U.S. economy is bouncing back from the recession, and that there's a good chance the Fed will raise interest rates later this month.
Holding the federal funds rate at its current level for too long could also encourage excessive risk-taking and thus undermine financial stability.
Markets right now downward pointing, the Dow down 158, S&P down 23. I'm Chaz Henry.
It's our first show. I'm so excited to be here.
How would you like to hear some of the biggest names on the planet? Anytime you want, anywhere you want. Well, you can at the world's number one site for on-demand audio, PodcastOne.com. PodcastOne.com is where you'll find huge stars and entertaining shows from Adam Carolla, Loveline, Shaquille O'Neal, Dan Patrick, Jessa Hinton, The Chive, Fantasy Sports, and many more. Over 200 amazing podcasts right there at your fingertips. Visit online at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Good afternoon, Eric Ryder here with you on Alternative Talk, 11:50 a.m. Time now for a quick look at our weather outlook. Looks like we may see some additional scattered showers today for Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Cloudy skies with rain expected with highs only around 50 degrees. Looks like Thursday could bring us a bit of wind as well.
Views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK FM 98.9 Digital HD3 Seattle.
Welcome to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. You're listening to Alternative Talk AM 1150. Great show today, as always. Great to be here also. Eric, how's it going?
Hey, good afternoon, Julie. Happy December.
Thank you.
To have you in the studio.
Isn't that crazy? It's December.
I know. This year just went by like that.
People say it all the time, like, oh, I can't believe it's all right, you know, I can't believe it's whatever. And it's like, I actually, like, December, what?
Right.
Holidays? Well, I had my 20-year high school reunion last weekend in Massachusetts, and it was fun.
Good.
I did get asked.
Not depressing at all, then?
No.
Okay, good.
Not for me. No, I was just like, oh, my gosh, all these faces and people who I spent my childhood with, it was really wonderful to see so many people. And, of course, I got asked some dog questions because a lot of them know through Facebook and such that I, you know, work with dogs and have the show and all that. And
well, hopefully we have some new listeners out there. So,
yeah, I hope so. Welcome.
Good evening, Massachusetts.
Yeah. Inevitably, though, there's like, oh, you work with dogs. My dog, no, 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 you know. So it was cool. I hope I was able to help some people out and give some guidance.
I think that's the great thing about our careers, that they're both conversation starters.
For sure.
Some people say, oh, I work in radio. And you're doing both, so you've got double conversation starters. You know, you're never short for something to talk about when you meet somebody. So it's got to be kind of cool.
It is. That's a good point. It is. I mean, it was, I actually woke up the next morning with barely any voice left. That's how much I was actually talking. And of course, it was super loud. So anyway, it was fun. Shout out to Massachusetts and the Medfield High School class of 1995. I just dated
Go
myself.
Go fighting. What's the Medfield mascot?
Warriors.
Go fighting Warriors.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going to be talking in about 10 minutes, starting with Arlene Weintraub, who is the author of a book titled Heal. Now, because this is a show about dogs, I need to clarify that it's spelled H-E-A-L, not H-E-E-L, because that word is played on quite a bit in our dog world. Heal, H-E-A-L, the vital role of dogs in the search for cancer cures. So really interesting book. I certainly learned a lot, and I'm looking forward to talking with her and sharing her and her book with you. Before we do, though, I did want to announce there is an event coming up this Saturday, December 5th. It's being hosted by AHELP Project, Animal Hospice End of Life and Palliative Care. That's what AHELP stands for. And it is a art therapy and remembrance event. So, of course, AHELP does a lot of work with supporting people, you know, during and through and after the end-of-life process with their pets. And you can create meaningful gifts, memorialize a beloved pet, and share a moment of remembrance led by their support circle facilitator for your animals who are no longer with you. And I've actually been to one of those before, and it was really awesome. Everybody gets to say something about the pet they were remembering, and, of course, everybody's crying and, you know, with grief, it's sad, and people don't generally like to feel sad, but it's just part of the deal, and it's a really effective way to move through that grieving process is to just feel the feelings and to get support from community, and also expressing, you know, remembering your pet and making something artistic is also really healing as well. So that is Saturday, December 5th, this Saturday. It's going to be up in Edmonds at Splash Dog, and you can go to the AHELP Project's website. You can also find them on Facebook for information about the event as well and to just be a part of their community if you're interested in doing this. It looks like tickets are $25, and that goes to pay for the, you know, art supplies and all that good stuff that they're providing, and it is at 2 p.m., this Saturday, December 5th, at Splash Dog in Edmonds. So you can go to ahelpproject.org and go to their upcoming events tab on the right-hand side, and this will come up, and you can get all the details there. That's ahelpproject.org. There was speaking of, well, old dogs anyway, hopefully not end of life, but our Lois, who we've talked about, she's an old dog Haven final refuge dog, which means that we got connected with Lois through Old Dog Haven, which is an amazing a local organization that gets dogs out of shelters and into loving homes, regardless of how long they may have left. It's really, really amazing work that they do. The organization is incredibly well run. It's very, very inspiring, both what a well-oiled machine they are, and the work that they do is really awesome. And we were inspired to take an Old Dog Haven dog into our home as a final refuge dog and give her a home for however long she had left. And we've had Lois for a year and a half now. She was told she was going to be a hospice dog, meaning they didn't think she had that much longer to live. And with the help of the Natural Pet Pantry, who's provided Lois their excellent cooked stew to live off of. And, of course, that's, you know, some of the best nutrition you can get a dog. We were able to take over 20 pounds off of her. She was very, very overweight. It was impacting her ability to breathe. So Natural Pet Pantry was super generous, as they always are, in providing her with their food. And then we've been taking Lois to Jet City Animal Clinic for her care, and Dr. Anderson and her team have been wonderful there as well. And Lois has aspiration pneumonia now. There's quite a bit of kennel cough and upper respiratory infections going around now in the dog community. And, you know, just kind of like how lots of people are sick now, there's lots of dogs that have sort of the equivalent of a cold or flu as well. And Lois has a compromised airway. She has scar tissue around her trachea. We're not sure if she lived with a heavy smoker or, you know, or worse. anyway, so for her to have some sort of respiratory infection is even more dangerous. And she is going for a procedure this afternoon to try to further diagnose so that they can treat her more effectively. And there's risk in that, you know, risk involved in that procedure because they have to put her under for it. She's been up the past couple nights coughing like crazy, and it's just scary to have a, you know, old compromised dog get sick. And and hard to, you know, I think parents can relate to this as well, to human children, hard to, you know, you can only do all that you can do and all that you know to do, and then the rest you just have to let their bodies kind of do, you know, heal or what. So feeling a little scared this afternoon about Miss Lois, and, you know, hopefully she comes through with flying colors and heals up from this no problem at all and lives many more years with us. But if you're listening, we would appreciate your thoughts and prayers for Lois this afternoon and evening, and we'll definitely keep you posted on that. So good luck, Lois, today. She's going into what used to be Access down in Renton, is now a Blue Pearl veterinary partner. She's going there for their procedure, and they've been great. That's where I had to take her in the middle of the night when she was coughing a couple days ago. So we love you, Lois, and good luck, and thanks for your thoughts and prayers for her. And then there was an interesting post by Patricia McConnell, who I have had on the show, and who's very well known in the world of animal behavior, dog behavior and training specifically. And she wrote an interesting post that if I have time today, I will address, but I did post it on our Facebook page, so you can sort of ponder this. If I don't get to it in the show today, you can ponder it on our Facebook page. This idea of whether we should expect dogs to be responsible for themselves. Okay, well, what does that mean? I mean, I think the first thing for these kinds of conversations is that we have to be clear about what we mean, because there's ways where it would not be fair to expect a dog. One of the most common examples in this conversation is like when people say, oh, the dog knew that they shouldn't do that. And it's like, well, not necessarily. So I don't know. It brings up a lot, and it definitely brings up a lot of interesting conversation around this topic. And she wrote a post about it, and there's lots of interesting comments. I certainly contributed a comment to it. I shared the post on our Facebook page. You can just search for The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, and it's the top post right now in our on our timeline. And you can check it out and kind of make a comment and see what you think about it. And if I have time today, I will revisit that at the end of the show and share my comments today. However, I'm happy to go off to our first break so that we can come back with Arlene Weintraub, who is the author of a book called Heal, The Vital Role of Dogs in the Search for Cancer Cures. Very interesting stuff. I'm looking forward to talking with her. And we will be right back with Arlene in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes.
Yes, I had no dog, his name was Blue. Well, I had no dog, his name was Blue. can bet you $5 he's a good dog too.
The Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
Next week on Conversations Live, in 438 days, an extraordinary true story of survival at sea, investigative journalist Jonathan Franklin tells of a fisherman who cheated death for 14 months, surviving on the open sea for longer than anyone in history. How did he live to tell the tale? What sustained his unbreakable will to endure? Tune in Monday at noon to find out, and listen to archive shows at conversationslive.net.
Wish your dog didn't hate going to the vet. Wish you were welcomed by a team who cared. Jet City Animal Clinic is an enjoyable respite from the same old thing. Dr. Anderson and her team have created a full-service facility that combines veterinary expertise with a comfortable style. Jet City Animal Clinic is located in Seattle's Capitol Hill neighborhood on 12th Avenue across from Seattle U. Bring your crazy questions, odd ideas, and alternative thinking. Jet City Animal Clinic will work with you to keep your furry family members healthy and happy. Traditionally educated with an open mind, call us at 206-329-0253 or email info@jetcityanimalclinic.com to make an appointment. Jet City Animal Clinic, a unique approach to the health care of your urban pet, a local family practice. JetCityAnimalClinic.com.
Don't be fooled by cheap imitations. There's only one Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. And talking with Arlene Weintraub. Arlene, am I saying your last name right?
Yes, you are, and thanks so much for having me.
Good. Well, thanks for being here, and thanks for writing this really very informative book. It's titled HEAL, H-E-A-L, The Vital Role of Dogs in the Search for Cancer Cures. And I definitely learned a lot. I've done a number of shows over the years about canine cancer, which unfortunately is super common, you know, in dogs as well as, you know, of course, human cancer as well is really common, unfortunately, in people. And various angles on it. I've interviewed the founder of Chase Away Canine Cancer, which actually raises money to fund, you know, cancer research. And then the author of a book titled When Your Dog Has Cancer, which was sort of informative for people going through that process. Talking about the different kinds of cancer, et cetera. And your book really talks about kind of two main angles on this conversation, which is, you know, the how dogs and their owners will participate in drug trials where they're sort of testing these drugs to see, you know, to try to find some effective cures. For cancer and how people and their dogs can participate in these drug trials, you know, of course, voluntarily, and then also how that benefits, you know, the efforts to trying to find these drugs to help humans as well, because I didn't know this particularly about cancer and tumors, but that cancer in dogs actually behaves very similarly to cancer in humans, which was really interesting to learn in your book, Arlene. So I wanted to start off before we get into the details of, you know, the information of the book, was to just start off and ask you as an author what inspired you to write this.
Well, I was working on staff at Business Week magazine back in 2009 as a science writer. And at the time, I was experiencing a terrible personal tragedy, which is that my sister, who was 47 years old, was diagnosed with gastric cancer, stage 4. And it was 1 year from diagnosis to the time that she lost her battle against the disease. And during that year, these two veterinarians from Texas A&M University showed up in my office and were talking about this research they were doing called comparative oncology, and the idea being that dogs get some of the same cancers that people get, and they were doing these trials that could end up helping both species and really were aimed at finding new innovative cures. And I was really inspired by this. I, of course, went back to my desk and did a search, dogs and gastric cancer, and was stunned to discover that they also get gastric cancer. And, you know, I think I had known in the back of my mind that dogs get cancer, but I didn't really understand how similar the experience was for them as it is for people. And I just started looking into it, writing some articles about it, and it became a book.
So one of the things that, you know, this idea of comparative oncology, first of all, I'm sorry that you lost your sister to this. You really are clear in your book about how devastating that was for you.
Thank you.
You know, one of the things that that's sort of flashed up in my mind over the years about, you know, raising money for cancer research or even in reading, even though you're clear about it in your book, it's like, oh, you know, dogs, you know, cancer behaves very similarly in dogs as it does for humans. And then I think, oh, no, that means that there's laboratory testing being done on dogs. And, you know, I've done shows over the years with, like, for example, Beagle Freedom Project, which is working to get dogs out of laboratory testing and all that kind of stuff. And the thing about this that's so cool is that, you know, this is not that, you know, this comparative oncology is voluntary and something that the dog's guardian is sort of signing their dog up for, thinking that it's, you know, potentially going to give their dog a chance at life in addition to helping the efforts to, you know, to help people.
Right, and that's something, you know, I traveled around to more than a half dozen veterinary schools that participate in this research, and it was something that was made clear to me from the very beginning. This is not animal research. This is exactly the same as if you were enrolling in a clinical trial or you were enrolling a child in a clinical trial. It's the main goal of these trials is to help the patients. And in the case of veterinary clinics, it's actually the number one top goal, to the point where if the dogs are suffering or if the dogs are not getting better, they're taken out of these trials, because veterinarians are very clear about their ethics, that the patients come first and their well-being comes first. And if science gains something, that's fantastic, but that's not why, you know, they're participating in these trials.
Right. I think there was one of the people who you interviewed, I don't remember which one, but they were very clear when they were talking to you that they were motivated not to help humans, but to help their dog, you know, and it was like, well, it's great that it could potentially help people, but I want to save my dog's life.
Right.
So, and there's so many different, I thought it was really interesting because this was not an aspect of this world that I had learned about yet, and one of the things that I just love about this show is that I keep meeting people like you, various authors or directors of organizations, and I get to learn so much. But I really learned, you know, you talk a lot about these when you're giving your sort of sharing stories of and interviewing people who have participated in these trials with their dogs for various different drugs and cancers. And I thought it was so interesting to learn about how these drugs are sort of working to essentially kill cancer. I mean, some of them cut the blood supply off of tumors, for example, or it was just like the science of it was so interesting to me in how they're trying to design and engineer these drugs to, you know, to eliminate cancer. It was really cool to learn about that.
Right, and a lot of these concepts were really pioneered thanks to the participation of dogs in these trials. I have a dog at the very beginning of my book who was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 2, mm-hmm. a golden retriever. Mm-hmm. And he was put on one of these drugs that cuts off the blood supply to tumors, and he lived for another 9 years. He was essentially cured of that cancer, and they didn't really know so much about that mechanism of cutting off the blood supply to tumors at the time, but now it's the basis of many, many cancer drugs that are used in both dogs and people.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, then they're getting better and better at this. There are lots of talking about different mutations and understanding what makes this disease tick, you know, and therefore being able to design drugs to sort of attack them and get rid of them. And the other thing that I thought was really interesting, you know, in more so in the world of behavior, that's my area of expertise, is dog training and behavior. And I've had a lot of conversations, you know, in that field with different, you know, experts and scientists is, you know, there's a lot of research, you know, in the last decade that's been done on how dogs learn and communicate and experience the world and all that kind of stuff. And there's been a lot of, it's interesting how well dogs and humans can communicate with each other. And dogs are better at reading human gestures than, say, primates, who are genetically closer to us. And then, you know, you're talking about dogs in this research compared to primates and the reasons why dogs are better for this. And one thing in particular that I thought was really interesting was how you talked about one of the things that dogs and humans have in common is the how much we vary in our phenotypic expression. So how our genes are expressed, you know, when looking at, you know, if you look around in a group of 100 people, everybody looks so different as an individual. And then when you look at dogs, you know, the same thing. If you look in a dog park or something, you're going to see Chihuahuas and Newfoundlands and Labs and, you know, gray dogs and tan dogs and black dogs and dogs with prick ears and dogs with floppy ears and curly tails and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I never made that connection before.
Right, and that's really important in cancer research because that's one of the things that makes dogs more like people. You know, when you look at the rodents, the mice and the rats that are traditionally used to test new products, they're so completely different from us, even though they're close to us genetically, but a lot of those animals are cloned. So mm-hmm. one is just like the one next to it. Mm-hmm. They don't develop cancer naturally like dogs and people do, mm-hmm. and so they have to be given the disease in some ways. And that's why scientists believe that a lot of cancer drugs end up failing in people. They might look great in mice and rats, and then they just don't work in people. And they think it's because, it's such a contrived situation with animals that are used in research laboratories mm-hmm. versus our pets in our homes that are living in the same environment that we are and experiencing the world the same way and developing cancers the same way.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was interesting that, compared to like mice or something like that, but then even compared to like chimpanzees, that if you look at, you know, 20 chimps, they sort of relatively look very similar versus people. I mean, back to that difference in similarity that dogs and humans have, I was just like, oh my gosh, I never even thought of that. But even, even not just mice versus people, but even like chimpanzees versus people. Which is great.
Right, and interestingly, chimpanzees don't have a very high rate of cancer either. So, that's also a artificial situation when you're using primates in research.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing that you had talked about in your book, and we're talking about Arlene's book, Heal, spelled H-E-A-L. I always have to clarify that because this is a show about dogs, right? So a lot of people are like, what's it, Heal, H-E-E? So that's a word is certainly played on a lot. H-E-A-L is the title of the book, Heal, The Vital Role of Dogs in the Search for Cancer Cures. There's so many factors to it. There's so much of, you know, obviously so much mystery to this beast of cancer in both dogs and people. And, you know, another benefit that you mentioned in your book is that dogs live in our environments with us, you know, and they, so there, that's another factor to, you know, that's similar to, you know, what might impact an individual in either the development of cancer in the first place or also how they might respond to treatment. Things like environmental toxins, diet, you know, all that kind of stuff. So that was an interesting point to make as well, that we share with dogs is our lifestyle.
Right, and actually, while I was writing this book, a very innovative study was launched by the Morris Animal Foundation, and I believe they called it the Golden Retriever Lifetime Study, and they enrolled a couple thousand Golden Retriever puppies in this study, which mm-hmm. they're going to track over their entire lifetime mm-hmm. to look at things like cancer development and environment and diet and all the things that might contribute to the development of diseases like cancer. And unfortunately, Golden Retrievers are very prone to cancer.
Yeah.
So that could be a very informative study, both for dogs and for people.
I was so glad that you mentioned that organization, because that's one that's been on my radar that I've been wanting to interview. And I was like, ah, oh, that's what they're called. And that like reminded me to get in touch and kind of find out more about, you know, their work in depth. And, yeah, the thing about Goldens that I've heard people say in the dog industry is it's not a question of if. It's a question of when, unfortunately. I mean, a lot of people say that. And I think you said in your book, I can't remember exactly, what was it, what percentage of it was of Goldens who end up with cancer in their lifetime?
Oh, yeah, it's a very high percentage, and some cancers are particularly prevalent in the breed, particularly lymphoma. Mm. And they do get a similar type of lymphoma to what people get. So, yeah, that lifetime study could end up being very informative for certain types of cancer.
Mm-hmm. Well, it'll be interesting. Do you know when that started? So they're following, I think this is really smart too, where they're starting the study with these dogs as puppies.
Right.
So it's not after the fact. They're going to be able to gather data from individuals who develop cancer and individuals who don't.
Right. And they're also hoping to enroll the dog's offspring so that they'll mm-hmm. have one or two or three generations beyond the original enrollees that they can also track, because that would help to shed some light on how genetics and family history might
right.
play into the development of diseases like cancer.
Yeah. So interesting. Now, you have a dog, don't you?
Yes, I do. Molly.
What kind of dog?
She's a terrier mix.
Uh-huh. And how old is she?
Well, I rescued her, so I don't know for certain, but I tell people she's at least 9 years old at this point.
Yeah. And how long have you had her?
I've had her since 2008, so almost 7 years now.
Cool.
And, you know, it's interesting. She's been very healthy, but in doing this book, I've come to the conclusion that I would not hesitate to enroll her in a clinical trial.
Yeah.
Because I just think there are so many benefits to it for dog owners, for dogs to get access to cutting-edge therapies.
Mm-hmm.
And so many of the diseases are similar in people that it has to help people too, ultimately.
Yeah. One of the things that you said in the book, and again, you know, this was really inspired by the devastating loss of your sister to cancer, and you were really motivated to kind of, you know, learn more about this and contribute to the efforts to try to help someone else. You know, you talked a bit about believing in science. This kind of came through a few times in the book. I believe, you know, I believe in science, and that you, and one, at one point, the word faith and science were in the same sentence. I think it was a faith, having faith in science. And it's so interesting because science, I have a science degree. I love science. I've talked with a ton of scientists, and I'm all about it. And I also have a strong faith. It's not necessarily an institutional religion, but I also feel very, you know, like I have a strong faith as well. And science is so much about, I mean, kind of the whole point is that you're really embracing the unknown. You're trying to understand what we don't understand yet. And I thought it was, you had talked about how science had failed your sister, and that your sort of belief in science, and it's just kind of an interesting contrast, because to engage in science is to sort of engage in the unknown and sort of be with what we don't know in an effort to try to try to know what we didn't know, you know, before.
Right. And yeah, I mean, I had completely lost my faith in science at the time that I found out about this field of comparative oncology. And towards the very beginning of the reporting process, I went and I met these two scientists in Silicon Valley, actually, who had enrolled their dogs in one of the first comparative oncology trials for this drug that we were talking about before that cuts off the blood supply to tumors, and it targets certain genetic mutations in tumors and so forth. And, you know, they said to me, "We believe in science." And you know, I thought that was so optimistic on their part, because their relatively young dog, I think she was 6 or 7, you know, was dying of cancer, and they didn't know how this drug worked, and they enrolled the dog in the trial anyway, and they got 2 years of life out of it, mm-hmm. which is a lot in dog years when you think about it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was when I first started to feel a glimmer of hope. And then the more veterinary schools that I went to and the more research that I learned about, I just felt that I was regaining my hope in science, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I think it's sort of struck me because I've heard scientists, so this is like a massive generalization, so I'm not saying all scientists or science in general or whatever, but there seems to be a contrast between science and faith. And scientists, I've heard in conversations that I've witnessed between actual, you know, scientists, which I'm not, is sort of an almost, science is their faith in a way, but that they don't sort of believe, that they're not necessarily religious. There's a lot of scientists who are not religious, where they're almost like their faith is in science. But I found it interesting to even use that language. It's like, well, you do have faith. It's just that it's in science. It's not in, you know, something else.
Right.
And there's also, like, it's so clear that there's just so much unknown. I mean, there is so much mystery to, well, why did this dog respond so well to this drug? Why didn't this dog, you know, I mean, how does this dog, how, you know, we'll get into this conversation here shortly, but like in the second part of the book where you talk about, you know, dogs' ability to detect cancer in others. So sort of shifting the conversation from dogs who have cancer, who are battling cancer, and then dogs who are like telling their owners, you've got something wrong here, go check it out, basically. I mean, you talked about you gave a number of really great stories about, you know, this dog who was like jumping up on her owner and like pushing, like sort of pushing her in the chest and like, hey, like when she was getting out of the car or something like that. And then she ended up, it turned out that she had breast cancer that was like a very deep rooted and hard to detect. I don't think it even showed up on a mammogram.
Right, and interestingly, she, as a career, she was training medical detection dogs, yeah, including the one who pushed up against her chest, and that started a whole mission by her organization to look into this idea that dogs can sniff cancer.
Yeah. It's one of the examples that I think, I mean, I've talked about this in a number of different ways. You know, scent detection in general is so interesting to me. Trying to wrap your brain around what it is like to experience a dog's sense of smell. And, you know, you gave some interesting sort of figures about the, you know, the dog's, the part of the dog's brain, for example, that analyzes scent is 40 times larger than the part of our brain that analyzes scent. And then you talked about the difference in, you know, to the millions of, you know, receptors in the nasal cavity or, you know, there's all of these different ways that, measurable ways that dog's sense of smell is clearly more sensitive. And then it's, you know, people are saying, and you say in your book, millions of times more sensitive than ours.
Right.
So it's like, well, how do you even wrap your brain around what that must be like to experience as an animal?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And what's great about that is that scientists have figured out pretty quickly since these reports first emerged that dogs could do this, they've been able to figure out pretty quickly what it is exactly that the dogs are smelling.
Uh-huh.
And it's basically chemical changes, minute chemical changes that come out in our breath or our blood or our urine that lets them know that something's not right. And I think the most promising part about this will be the ability to translate this into electronic noses, some people call them, or diagnostic devices that can mimic the dog's nose. I think that would be really exciting to be able to detect cancers that cannot otherwise be detected early enough to cure.
Well, and the thing, I want to talk about the electronic nose, but before that, you know, when you're talking about the dog's ability to sense the changes, the chemical changes in, like, breath, for example, and you mentioned this in your book, like, even though somebody ate a lot of garlic the night before, I mean, you know, so they're like, they're able to sense this in the presence of so many other chemical changes that are happening in the breath, for example.
Right.
All the time anyway.
Yeah. It's like imprinting that they do for search and rescue dogs. They can be taught to sniff the cancer, and then they will be able to smell it no matter what other smells are there that you think would be able to mask the cancer smell. And it's really incredible because obviously they're smelling something that none of us can smell.
Right.
So,
yeah, not even close. So there's something that they're being trained to focus on.
Right.
And that was something I was actually talking with a client before I came here today about this interview and about how dogs can smell cancer. And she was like, what? Yeah, it's so interesting. And she's like, I don't even know. Like, my dog, you know, they have a puppy, you know, cockapoo puppy, and she's talking about how she wasn't even sure if her dog could smell a treat, you know, through a plastic cup. And it's like, well, it's something that they are, you know, it's a skill that's sort of honed and they're really trained and learn how to really focus that ability to smell. So it's not just something where, I mean, there are some cases, I think, where dogs will be able to tell if something's going on with their owner, and they have not been trained to do that. I mean, seizure alert dogs are a great example of that. I don't think that they've figured out yet exactly what dogs are picking up on.
Right.
They're just doing it.
Yes. And the diabetic alert dogs, also, the situation there is very similar to the cancer, which is that they're smelling minute chemical changes.
Yeah. It's ketones, is that right, for diabetic?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's just incredible. So with this electronic nose, so to speak, do you know, you talked about it in the book, but do you know, like, how far they've gotten as far as, I think that is such an interesting project to take on, to try to develop a machine that can be as chemically sensitive as a dog's nose? I mean, that is so awesome. Do you know how far they've gotten with that or kind of where they're at with that?
Well, a number of institutions have built prototypes, including the Cleveland Clinic, but the Technion Institute in Israel actually is the furthest along on this because they have developed a number of devices and put them into human clinical trials. So that's going on now, and they've been able to show, including with gastric cancer, by the way, that that these electronic noses can detect the difference, for example, between early-stage gastric cancer and something less deadly, you know, like an ulcer. Mm-hmm. And so these devices are in trials now. They're going to have to be, I think the challenge here is that they're going to have to be even better than the dogs. The dogs have been shown to be over 90% accurate. But in order to get a device through the FDA and other regulatory agencies, I think it's going to have to be even better than that, like almost 100% accurate, because
right.
you don't want to be getting things like false positives
right.
where
right.
you're scaring people or
sure.
sending them off for other tests that might not be necessary. So
right.
so it's going to be a process of perfecting the devices, but I'm pretty optimistic that we will see it happen.
Well, and how it could be applied elsewhere, too. I mean, I was just traveling over the holiday, and I always get so excited when I see this, but there was a dog working the security line, you know, as there's people standing at the airport waiting to go through security, and there, you know, there's this woman walking a dog, a working dog, through the line, and the dog is, checking everybody and their bags, I assume looking for explosives, but... You know, imagine how this could be applied if they're able to mimic through technology a machine's ability to be sensitive to something, whatever it is, programmed, I guess, to be sensitive to, how that could be applied elsewhere as well.
Right. And there are even ideas out there for using the actual dogs. I spoke to one woman who is... training a dog to be like a service dog for a woman who survived cancer and wants sort of the peace of mind of knowing that she's not having a recurrence. So that's one idea that's out there. I spoke to a different woman who wants to develop a breath test that people would do at home, and then they would send it in to be sniffed by her dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see where this goes.
Yeah. Well, yes, it seems like we have a ways to go. There's so much that has been learned and so much more that they'll continue to discover. And, we talked about sort of what motivated you to sort of engage in this process was the loss of your sister and how devastating that was for you and how you just felt like you had to do something with that. So how was on a personal level, how was, completing this book and the process for you? Did you feel like it helped your grief process?
Oh, it definitely did. It was very therapeutic. You know, I end the book by going to Tufts University, where there's a veterinarian who has devoted a lot of her career to understanding gastric cancer in dogs.
Mm-hmm.
And meeting with her was just really uplifting because she is determined to find the genetic causes of this disease, which, of course, will end up helping people too, because it's very likely that we share some of the same genetic factors that might lead to this disease. And gastric cancer is a huge mystery. There's very little understood about what causes it. And so, you know, that type of research, I think, could really get us far in being able to prevent this kind of tragedy from happening to other families.
Mm-hmm.
So I was very inspired by yeah. the end of the process, definitely.
Yeah. And contributing to the cause with the work that you did and, writing this book and putting together all this information, letting people know, that... so what are some ways that people can support the trial efforts if somebody has a dog who's been diagnosed with cancer? Is that something that they can ask their vet about? Are there any, you know, is this something that people can sort of seek, or is it something that they have to be invited to participate in?
No, they can definitely seek it out, and I provide a lot of information in the book about where to go, but on the internet there's a lot of information. There's a Comparative Oncology Trials Consortium, COTC, and if anybody can Google that and get straight to a page that lists some clinical trials. But I also recommend that people call their nearest veterinary school to get information, because that's where a lot of the research is happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned a lot of different vet schools, UC Davis, Tufts. We have Washington State University on the other side of our state. Well, it was really great. I learned a lot. I appreciate, you know, the time and energy that you put into writing the book and helping sort of promote this effort, the efforts to advance our understanding of cancer and how to treat it and hopefully find cures. So was there anything else that's there for you as far as, you know, what you wanted to communicate in this conversation?
No, I mean, I'd just like to tell anybody out there who might be dealing with cancer in their dog that the clinical trial is a really good opportunity to contribute to the search for a cure, as well as to give your dog a chance at life that they may not otherwise have. And so I really encourage people to look into it.
Yeah, and it sounds like they are pretty consistently, you know, very well run, that everybody's, like you said earlier, very sensitive to the comfort and experience of the dog, and that if it doesn't look like it's, you know, a good fit or whatever, they'll kind of make the person stop, even if the person wants to keep going, and that everybody seems really mindful and sensitive to the dog's experience. So definitely
right.
Something to encourage people to participate in.
Right.
Well, thanks so much for your time today, Arlene. Again, the book is titled Heal, H-E-A-L, The Vital Role of Dogs in the Search for Cancer Cures. And is it sold where all fine books are sold?
Yes, yeah, so you can find it at all the major booksellers.
Booksellers, online, and retail as well. Again, it's
right.
Titled Heal, H-E-A-L. And if you've missed any part of our interview, you can find it archived on our website, dogradioshow.com. Just go to the podcast page. You can also go to iTunes and download it for free, along with all of our over 350 episodes. All right, well, we're going to take a quick break and say goodbye to Arlene. Again, Arlene, thanks so much for your time today and for writing this really wonderful book titled Heal, and my best to you and your efforts moving forward.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, you're welcome. All right, we'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. Natural Pet Pantry is Seattle's original source for wholesome dog and cat meals, offering 8 different protein options to accommodate your pet's dietary needs. Made locally using all U.S.-sourced ingredients, their freshly ground stews, raw or cooked, can be purchased from their 2 stores in Burien and Kirkland, most independent pet supply stores, or delivered right to your door. Go to naturalpetpantry.com for more information. I'm Julie Forbes, and my first choice for my pet's food is the Natural Pet Pantry. It's the educated choice.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to the Northwest School of Animal Massage on Vashon Island, we cover the world of animals. This week, December 6th, it's Shelter Rescue Sanctuary and anything that helps our animal friends Sunday. We'll start out with the horses at All Breed Equine Rescue in Marysville, and we'll finish with the Ananda Institute of Living Yoga and highlight their holiday happenings. In between, a whole new lineup, and we'll let out the jingle cats. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
This is Julie Forbes, dog training, behavior, and nutrition specialist and owner of Sensitive Dogs, thoughtful guidance for you and your dog. If your dog needs basic obedience training, a behavior evaluation, or food consultation, I can help you. Call me at 206-372-7399 or visit my website, www.sensitivedogs.com. I teach group obedience classes, in-home lessons, and evaluations, and a two-week intensive training program called Higher Education. Again, I'm Julie Forbes, Seattle's dog behavior training and nutrition specialist. www.sensitivedog.com.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Welcome back to the Dog Show with Julie Forbes. Just have a few minutes left here today. Had a great conversation with Arlene Weintraub, the author of a book titled Heal, H-E-A-L, The Vital Role of Dogs in the Search for Cancer Cures. If you missed any part of that interview or any of our over 350 episodes now, you can find them all archived on our website, dogradioshow.com. You can also go to iTunes, download them for free. Be sure to find us on Facebook as well, The Dog Show with Julie Forbes. I post our interviews directly to our Facebook page, and you can also be a part of our conversation in between our live shows every Wednesday at 2. You know, one of my, if not the favorite aspect of this that I, you know, for me in doing this show over the years is getting to talk with people like Arlene, different authors, you know, various organizations and individuals who are just doing really amazing things in the world of dogs. And I've learned so much and I love learning. And there's, you know, the more that I do this show, I mean, we've had over 350 episodes and, you know, they're each an hour long. So, you know, people are like, oh my gosh, don't you run out of things to talk about? And it's actually the opposite. The more that I do this, every show that goes by, the more that I feel like there is to talk about in this world. So I just so appreciate all the really brilliant people out there who are doing good things, you know, in the world of dogs, and that I get to talk to them and share them with you. I'm interviewing in a pre-recorded show on Friday, Bernie Siegel. I'm super excited about that. He has a new book, Love, Animals, and Miracles, that is out. And then I'm interviewing another author live next Wednesday. It's a biography. I don't know if that's the right word. Certainly not an autobiography of a dog from World War I, who's had a big role in helping the efforts in World War I, a little terrier mix, and this guy's written a book about him, and I'm going to be talking with him next week, so I'm super excited. So we will be back next Wednesday live at 2 p.m. Be sure to visit us online at dogradioshow.com. Check out all our archives and all of my favorite doggy videos. Thanks for listening today. Have a great week.
And callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. Content during the program are the responsibility of the host of this program, and not of the station, its management, or other advertisers. This is Alternative Talk, 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KLCK FM 98.9, Digital HD3 Seattle.
Good afternoon, Eric Reiner here with you on Alternative Talk, 1150 AM. We are headed towards 3 o'clock, and it's time once again to take a look at our traffic situation. While right now on southbound I-5, we're seeing heavy traffic between Northeast 45th and the I-90 interchange, a little more slowing in the south end from Enchanted Parkway on down to the Fife area. 405 southbound, going to see some slowing around the I-90 interchange on down to about 112, a little more in the Tukwila area. 167... Northbound standard delays between Kent and Auburn. Northbound 405 right now, congestion between Northeast 195th and the 527 interchange. Doug's Knob Radio coming up next. Stay tuned.
Special report, California shootings. I'm Chance Henry. More than a dozen of those caught in the rain of gunfire in Southern California have died. That word from the San Bernardino Police Department, which confirms at least 14 were killed, 14 more injured in a shooting at the city's Inland Regional Center, a place providing care and services to people with developmental disabilities. President Obama, having been briefed on the violence.
Obviously, our hearts go out to the victims and the families.
Brandon Hunt works where it happened. He tells us about an event that was taking place when the attacks occurred.
The only thing I know about the outside the event was it was for a banquet for county personnel. And the parking lot was full. I would assume there was at least 100 people inside.
With witnesses telling officers they saw three well-armed attackers, tensions have ratcheted. Correspondent Jim Sciutto.
The use of long rifles, automatic weapons, the fact as well that they got away. I mean, this suggests planning, a pre-planned operation, not an act of passion.
Again, we're being told 14 dead, 14 injured in that San Bernardino shooting incident. I'm Chaz Henry. Opening statements being made today in the trial of Baltimore police officer William Porter, one of six officers charged in the death of Freddie Gray, who prosecutors say was fatally injured while in those officers' custody. Correspondent Miguel Marquez telling his prosecutors say Porter could have kept Gray from dying.
They say all of this could have been avoided if all